Unit 2, Understanding Products and Their Risks. In this unit, you will become familiar with specific securities products. These products can generally be broken down into two categories, equity and debt. Here, we will examine a number of each, looking at their unique characteristics, enabling you to differentiate one from the other. We'll also touch on derivative products, those that have value derived from another security, for example, options. Recognizing that there are a number of different types of risk that can impact securities investments is important. We'll look at the most common of these risks and how they can affect not only individual securities, but entire portfolios as well. Objectives. When you have completed the unit, you should be able to compare the characteristics of equity and debt securities, recognize the basic option contract characteristics, calculate premiums, break-even points, and maximum gain and loss for simple option positions, compare the characteristics of different investment products, define different investment risks, and identify risks associated with different investment products. 2.1. Products. Learning objectives. Compare the characteristics of equity and debt securities. Recognize the basic option contract characteristics. Calculate premiums, break-even points, and maximum gain and loss for simple option positions. And compare the characteristics of different investment products. Investment products come in a number of forms and can represent different types of participation in the issuing company's business. For example, equity securities represent ownership in an issuing company, and debt securities represent a loan to the issuing company, while a number of derivative products, such as options, represent neither. In the following sections, we'll define and take a closer look at the characteristics of the most common and utilized investment products. 2.1.1. Equities. Individual investors, by purchasing shares of stock in a company, can participate in the company's prosperity. They can benefit from an increase in the price of the shares, capital appreciation, and by sharing in earnings through the receipt of dividends, or distributed profits. Essentially, these shares represent ownership in the corporation. 2.1.1.1. Common Stock. A company issues stock to raise capital. Investors who buy the stock also buy a share of ownership in the company's net worth. Net worth is calculated by taking the business's assets less its liabilities, its creditors' claims. The resulting net worth belongs to the business owners, its stockholders. Each share of stock entitles its owner to a portion of the company's earnings and dividends and a proportionate vote in major management decisions. Most corporations are organized in such a way that their stockholders regularly vote for and elect individuals to a board of directors to oversee company business. By electing a board of directors, stockholders have a say in the company's management, but are not involved in the day-to-day details of its operations. Example. If a corporation issues 100 shares of stock, each share represents an identical 1/100th or 1% ownership position in the company. An investor who owns 10 shares of stock would own 10% of the company. An investor who owns 50 shares of stock would own 50% of the company. Benefits of owning common stock. Common shareholders enjoy a number of benefits, including voting rights, the opportunity for capital appreciation and current income, as well as limited liability. Following, we'll explore these benefits. Rights of common stockholders. Common stockholders have the right to vote for corporate directors. Frequently, it is not possible for the stockholder to attend the stockholders' meetings to personally cast a vote. An absentee ballot, known as a proxy, is made available for those shareholders who want to vote but can't attend the shareholder meeting. Those voting by proxy can generally do so by mail or online. Common stock is freely transferable to anyone who wants to buy it or receive it as a gift. In this regard, shareholders have the right to sell or give away their shares without permission of the corporation. Without this feature, there would be no stock markets. Common stockholders have a right to limited access to the corporation's books. For the most part, common stockholders have the right to examine the minutes of meetings of the board of directors and the right to examine the list of stockholders. Usually, this right is not exercised unless the performance of the corporation's management declines seriously. They also have the right to receive an audited set of financial statements of the company's performance each year, annual reports. Finally, common stockholders usually have the preemptive right to maintain their proportionate share of ownership in the corporation. The word preempt means to put oneself in front of another. If a corporation wants to issue additional shares, existing shareholders have the right to purchase those shares in an amount that would keep their proportionate ownership in the corporation unchanged. Growth or capital gains. An increase in the market price of securities is capital appreciation. Historically, owning common stock has provided investors with returns in excess of the inflation rate. For this reason, most investors with a long-term investment horizon have included common stocks in their portfolios as a hedge against inflation. Of course, it must be mentioned that stock prices can decline, particularly over the short run. Income. Many corporations pay regular quarterly cash dividends to stockholders. Dividends are declared by the Board of Directors, or BOD, and may increase over time as profitability increases. Dividends, which can be a significant source of income for investors, are a major reason many people invest in stocks. Issuers may also pay stock dividends, additional shares in the issuing company, or property dividends, shares in a subsidiary company or a product sample. Limited liability. One of the most important features of equity ownership is limited liability. In the event of a corporation's bankruptcy, when corporate assets are not adequate to meet corporate obligations, personal assets are not at risk. One cannot be forced to sell any personal assets to help pay the debts of the business. If an individual invests $5,000 in the stock of a corporation that goes bankrupt, the investor may lose the entire $5,000 invested if the company is not salvaged, but the investor will not be forced to pay out any more monies to take care of additional debts. Shareholders are personally at risk only for the amount that was invested. By contrast, a partner or sole proprietor risks not only the amount personally invested in the business, but also personal assets should the business not be able to pay off its obligations. In summation, why would you include common stock in a client's portfolio? Potential capital appreciation, income from dividends, and hedge against inflation. In doing so, the client would be incurring the following risks: market and business difficulties leading to possible reduction or elimination of the dividend, and even bankruptcy leading to the loss of principal. Risks of owning common stock. Regardless of their expectations, investors have no assurances that they will receive the returns they expect from their investments. The risks of owning common stock are listed following. Market risk. The chance that a stock will decline in price is one risk of owning common stock, known as market risk. A stock's price fluctuates daily as perceptions of the company's business prospects change and influence the actions of buyers and sellers. Investors have no assurance whatsoever that they will be able to recoup the investment in a stock at any time. The price of a stock when an investor wishes to sell shares may be higher or lower than when the shares were initially purchased. Decreased or no dividend income. A risk of stock ownership is the possibility of dividend income decreasing or ceasing entirely if the company loses money. The decision to pay a dividend rests with the board of directors, and it is not guaranteed. Low priority at dissolution. If a company enters bankruptcy, the holders of its bonds and preferred stock have priority over common stockholders. A company's debt and preferred shares are considered senior securities. Common stockholders have residual rights to corporate assets upon dissolution. Only after debt holders and preferred shareholders are paid would common shareholders be paid if there were any funds left to divide among them. Take note. In owning common equity, the investor stands to lose current income through dividend reduction or suspension, as well as capital loss should the market price decline. In return, however, the shareholder has limited liability, that is, the liability is limited to the amount invested. Bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is a general term for a federal court procedure that allows both individuals and businesses to get relief from their debts or make a plan to repay their creditors. For those entitled to file for bankruptcy, the court will protect them from creditors during the bankruptcy proceedings. Though there are different classifications or chapters of bankruptcy, they can be broken down into two basic types: reorganization and liquidation. Limiting our discussion of bankruptcy to businesses and corporations rather than individuals, the primary difference between a reorganization and a liquidation is that in a reorganization, the entity will likely be able to retain property and continue doing business, but must submit and stick to a plan that will allow the repayment of some or all of its existing debts within a specified time frame. Liquidation, on the other hand, means that keeping property or continuing business will not occur, and all property will be taken and sold to repay all debts. Liquidation. In the event a company liquidates, the priority of claims on the company's assets that will be sold are as follows: IRS, taxes, and employees, unpaid wages; secured debt, bonds and mortgages; unsecured liabilities and general creditors, suppliers and utilities; subordinated debt, debt holders who agreed to be paid back last of all debt holders in the event a liquidation ever needed to occur; preferred stockholders; and common stockholders. While the priority standing can differ slightly depending upon which chapter of bankruptcy a company is filing under, the basic structure should be noted as being divided into three simple categories: taxes and wages, debt holders, bonds, and equity holders, stocks. Take note. In the corporation liquidation priority, common shareholders are paid last of all bond and stockholders. Consider that only in cases where there are funds remaining after all others are paid do common stockholders receive anything. Such cases can be rare. 2.1.1.2. Preferred stock. Preferred stock is an equity security because it represents a class of ownership in the issuing corporation. Although it is an equity security, it does share some characteristics with a debt security. Like debt securities, the rate of return on a preferred stock is fixed rather than subject to variation, as with common stock. A preferred stock's annual dividend represents its fixed rate of return. This is a key attraction for income-oriented investors. Normally, a preferred stock is identified by its annual dividend payment stated as a percentage of its par value. Always assume preferred par value is $100, unless stated differently. Example: a preferred stock with a par value of $100 that pays $6 in annual dividends is known as a 6% preferred, or $6 dividend over $100 par. The dividend of a preferred stock with no par value is stated as a $6 no par preferred. Two final characteristics of preferred stock are that, unlike common shareholders, preferred shareholders generally have no voting rights, nor do they have preemptive rights. With few exceptions, the right to vote for board members or on other corporate issue is reserved for common shareholders. Take note: all corporations issue common stock, but not all corporations issue preferred stock. Benefits of owning preferred stock. Although preferred stock does not typically have the same growth potential as common stock, preferred stockholders have some advantages over common stockholders. Dividend preference. When the board of directors declares dividends, owners of preferred shares must be paid prior to any payment to common shareholders. Priority at dissolution over common stock. If a corporation goes bankrupt, preferred stockholders have a priority claim over common stockholders on the assets remaining after creditors have been paid. Risks of owning preferred stock. Although they enjoy some preferences, owners of preferred stock face risks as well. Purchasing power risk. The potential that, because of inflation, the fixed income produced will not purchase as much in the future as it does today. Interest rate sensitivity. Like a fixed income security, when interest rates rise, the value of preferred shares declines. This will be discussed in greater detail later in this unit. Decreased or no dividend income. Like common stock ownership, there is the possibility of dividend income decreasing or ceasing entirely if the company loses money. The decision to pay a dividend rests with the Board of Directors, or BOD, and it is not guaranteed. Priority at dissolution. While preferred shareholders are paid before common shareholders, if a company enters bankruptcy, they are paid behind all creditors. In summation, why would you include preferred stock in a client's portfolio? Fixed income from dividends. Prior claim ahead of common stock. Convertible preferred sacrifices income in exchange for potential appreciation, discussed shortly. In doing so, the client would be incurring the following risks: possible loss of purchasing power, interest rate or money rate risk, and business difficulties leading to possible reduction or elimination of the dividend, and even bankruptcy leading to loss of principal. Types of preferred. Separate categories of preferred may differ in several ways, including dividend rate and profit participation privileges. However, all maintain preference over common stock. Straight or non-cumulative. Straight preferred has no special features beyond the stated dividend payment. Missed dividends are not paid to the holder. Cumulative. Cumulative preferred stock accrues payments due its shareholders in the event dividends are reduced or suspended. Dividends due cumulative preferred stock accumulate on the company's books until the corporation's board of directors decides to pay them. When the company resumes dividend payments, cumulative preferred stockholders receive current dividends plus the total accumulated dividends, dividends in arrears, before any dividends may be distributed to common stockholders. Example. In 2011, RST Corporation had both common stock and cumulative preferred stock outstanding. The common paid a dividend of $1 and the preferred paid a $2 dividend. Because of financial difficulties, the company stopped paying dividends during 2011. After resolving its problems in 2015, the company resumed dividend payments and paid the cumulative preferred shareholders an $8 dividend for dividends in arrears for years 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2014, plus the current year's, 2015, $2 dividend, $10 total, before paying any dividends to the common stockholders. Callable preferred. Corporations often issue callable or redeemable preferred, which a company can buy back from investors at a stated price after a specified date. The right to call the stock allows the company to replace a relatively high fixed dividend obligation with a lower one when the cost of money has gone down. This is similar to refinancing a mortgage. When a corporation calls a preferred stock, dividend payments cease on the call date. In return for the call privilege, the corporation may pay a premium exceeding the stock's par value at the call, such as $103 for a $100 par value stock. Convertible preferred. A preferred stock is convertible if the owner can exchange the shares for a fixed number of shares of the issuing corporation's common stock. Convertible preferred is generally issued with a lower stated dividend rate than non-convertible preferred of the same quality, because the investor may have the opportunity to convert to common shares and enjoy greater capital gain potential. The concept of a convertible security will be discussed in greater detail later in this unit when we cover convertible bonds. Take note. Because the value of a convertible preferred stock is linked to the value of a common stock, the convertible preferred share price tends to fluctuate in line with the common. Adjustable rate preferred. Some preferred stocks are issued with adjustable or variable dividend rates. Such dividends are usually tied to the rates of other interest rate benchmarks, such as treasury bills and money market rates, and can be adjusted as often as quarterly. Because the payment adjusts to current interest rates, the price of the stock remains relatively stable. Test topic alert. For investors looking for income through preferred stocks, this would be their least appropriate choice. Participating preferred. In addition to fixed dividends, participating preferred stock offers its owners a share of corporate profits that remain after all dividends and interest due other securities are paid. The percentage to which participating preferred stock participates is noted on the stock certificate. Example. If a preferred stock is described as XYZ 6% preferred participating to 9%, the company pays its holders up to 3% in additional dividends in profitable years if the board of directors declares so. 2.1.1.3 Control and Restricted Securities, SEC Rule 144. SEC Rule 144 regulates the sale of control and restricted securities, stipulating the holding period, quantity limitations, manner of sale, and filing procedures. Control securities are those owned by directors, officers, or persons who own or control 10% or more of the issuer's voting stock. Take note. If an unaffiliated individual owns 7% of the voting stock of XYZ, that person is not a control person. However, if that person's spouse owns 4% of the voting stock, then both would be considered control persons. In other words, if there is a 10% or more interest held by immediate family members, then all those family members owning voting stock are control persons. Restricted securities are those acquired through some means other than a registered public offering. A security purchased in a private placement is a restricted security. Restricted securities may not be sold until they have been held fully paid for 6 months. According to Rule 144, after holding restricted stock fully paid for 6 months, an affiliate may begin selling shares, but is subject to the volume restriction rules as enumerated following. In any 90-day period, an investor may sell the greater of 1% of the total outstanding shares of the same class at the time of sale, or the average weekly trading volume in the stock over the past 4 weeks on all exchanges, or as reported through NASDAQ. After the 6-month holding period, affiliated persons are subject to the volume restrictions for as long as they are affiliates. For unaffiliated investors, the stock may be sold completely unrestricted after the 6-month holding period has been satisfied. Selling shares under Rule 144 effectively registers the shares. In other words, buyers of stock being sold subject to Rule 144 are not subject to any restrictions if they choose to resell. In summary, under Rule 144, restricted stock, which is unregistered, held by a non-affiliate or non-insider, has a 6-month hold and can sell freely thereafter. Restricted stock, unregistered, held by an affiliate or insider, has a six-month hold and volume limits thereafter. Control stock is registered, held by an affiliate or insider. There is no hold and volume limits always apply. 2.1.1.4 Penny stocks. A penny stock is an unlisted or not listed on a U.S. stock exchange security trading at less than $5 per share. Equity securities defined as penny stocks are considered highly speculative. In this light, SEC rules require that customers, before their initial transaction in a penny stock, be given a copy of a risk disclosure document. The member must receive a signed and dated acknowledgement from the customer that the document has been received. Not surprisingly, the penny stock disclosure document fully describes the risks associated with penny stock investments. Regardless of activity in the account, if the account holds penny stocks, broker-dealers must provide a monthly account statement to the customer. This must indicate the market value and number of shares for each penny stock held in the account, as well as the issuer's name. Penny stock cold calling rules. SEC rules regarding cold calling customers also state that when a broker-dealer's representative contacts a potential customer to purchase penny stocks, this is a solicitation to buy, like those occurring during a cold call, the representative must first determine suitability on the basis of information about the buyer's financial situation and objectives. The customer must sign and date this suitability statement before any initial penny stock trades can be effected. In addition, the broker-dealer must disclose the name of the penny stock, the number of shares to be purchased, a current quotation, and the amount of commission that the firm and the representative received. Take note. The provisions of the penny stock rules apply only to solicited transactions like those that might occur during a cold call. Unsolicited transactions, those not recommended by the broker-dealer or registered representative, are exempt. Established customer exemption. Established customers are exempt from the suitability statement requirement, but not from the disclosure requirements. An established customer is someone who has held an account with the broker-dealer for at least 1 year and has made a deposit of funds or securities, or has made at least 3 penny stock purchases of different issuers on different days. 2.1.2 Debt securities or bonds. Debt capital represents money borrowed by corporations, the federal government or local governments, municipalities, from investors. The loan is evidenced by a bond, which is a certificate representing the borrower's indebtedness to the investor. These certificates state the borrower's obligation to pay back a specific amount of money on a specific date to the investor. They also state the borrower's obligation to pay the investor a specific rate of interest for the use of the funds. When an investor buys a bond, the investor is lending the borrowing entity money for a set period of time at a fixed annual interest rate. The investor, in the position of lender, is acquiring no ownership in the entity as he would when purchasing stock, but instead is now a creditor of the borrowing entity. 2.1.2.1 Bond characteristics. Before we explore bonds from different issuers, corporate, federal government, and municipal governments, let's introduce some basic bond characteristics. Maturities. Each bond has its own maturity date. This is the date the investor receives the loan principal back. While common maturities are in the 5 to 30 year range, some can be much shorter, short-term debt securities, and other longer. Maturities come in different types: term, serial, and balloon. Term. A term bond is structured so that the principal of the whole issue matures at once. Because the entire principal is repaid at one time, issuers may establish a sinking fund account to accumulate money to retire the bonds at maturity. Serial. A serial bond issue schedules portions of the principal to mature at intervals over a period of years until the entire balance has been repaid. Balloon. An issuer sometimes schedules its bond's maturity using elements of both serial and term maturities. The issuer repays part of the bond's principal before the final maturity date, as with a serial maturity, but pays off the major portion of the bond at maturity. This bond has a balloon, or serial and balloon, maturity. Coupons. The coupon represents the interest rate the issuer has agreed to pay the investor. At one time, bonds were actually issued with interest coupons attached that the investor would detach and turn in to receive the interest payments. While bonds are no longer issued with physical coupons attached, the interest rate the bond pays is still called the coupon rate. It is also referred to as the stated or nominal yield. It is calculated from the bond's par value, usually stated as a percentage of par. Par value, also known as face value for a bond, is normally $1,000 per bond, meaning each bond will be redeemed for $1,000 when it matures. Therefore, a bond with a 6% coupon is paying $60 in interest per year, or 6% times $1,000 par value, which equals $60. Take note, interest is generally paid on a semi-annual basis. Using the previous example, the 6% coupon bond would pay $30 in interest every 6 months, a total of $60 per year. Pricing. Once a bond is trading in the secondary markets, they can trade at a price of par, a premium to par, or a discount to par. If par equals $1,000, an example of a premium bond might be one trading at $1,200, and an example of a discount bond might be one trading at $800. Market forces affecting bond prices. Bond prices can be impacted by the usual market forces that impact securities in general, such as supply and demand. However, because they are debt instruments, they have a particular sensitivity to changes in market interest rates. Remember that the interest rate the issuer pays is the cost of borrowing money. In that light, it makes sense that bond prices will rise and fall as interest rates fluctuate. Generally, bond prices have an inverse relationship to interest rates. If interest rates go up, bond prices for those trading in the secondary markets will go down. Conversely, if interest rates are falling, bond prices for those trading in the secondary market will be going up. Think about it this way. If interest rates in the marketplace were 6%, wouldn't a bond currently paying 8% trading in the secondary market look attractive? It would, and as investors were attracted to it, its price would push upward. On the other hand, if interest rates in the marketplace were at 6%, wouldn't a bond currently paying only 4% look less attractive? It would, and as investors moved to sell it, its price would move downward. Take note, though the price of the bond will react to market forces, interest rate sensitivity, and general supply and demand, the coupon is always the same. The coupon is a fixed percentage of par value. A 6% coupon pays $60 of annual interest, no matter what the current market value of the bond is. Yields. A bond's yield expresses the cash interest payments in relation to the bond's value. Yield is determined by the issuer's credit quality, prevailing interest rates, time to maturity, and any features the bond may have, such as a call feature that we'll discuss shortly. As noted earlier, a bond can be traded at prices other than par, so the price discount or premium from par is taken into consideration when calculating a bond's overall yield. You can look at a bond's yield in several ways. Nominal yield. Coupon, nominal, or stated yield is set at the time of issue. Remember that the coupon is a fixed percentage of the bond's par value. Current yield. Current yield, or CY, measures a bond's annual coupon payment, or interest, relative to its market price, as shown in the following equation. Annual coupon payment divided by market price equals current yield. Yield to maturity. A bond's yield to maturity, or YTM, reflects the annualized return of the bond if held to maturity. In calculating yield to maturity, the bondholder takes into account the difference between the price that was paid for a bond and par value received when the bond matures. If the bond is purchased at a discount, the investor makes money at maturity. In other words, the discount amount increases the return. If the bond is purchased at a premium, the investor loses money at maturity. In other words, the premium amount decreases the return. Example. If a bond is purchased for $900, a discount, and is held to maturity, at maturity the investor will receive $1,000, or par. The amount of the discount, $100, increases the investor's return. On the other hand, if a bond is purchased for $1,100, a premium, and is held to maturity, at maturity the investor will receive $1,000, or par, and the amount of the premium paid, $100, reduces the investor's return. Yield to call. Some bonds are issued with what is known as a call feature. A bond with a call feature may be redeemed before maturity at the issuer's option. Essentially, when a callable bond is called in by the issuer, the investor receives the principal back sooner than anticipated, before maturity. Yield to call, or YTC, calculations reflect the early redemption date and consequent acceleration of the discount gain if the bond was originally purchased at a discount, or the accelerated premium loss if the bond was originally purchased at a premium. Recognizing the relationship these yields have to one another is important and will depend on if a bond is trading at par, a premium, or a discount. You should note that while the coupon, nominal or stated yield, never changes regardless of price, the coupon yield, yield to maturity, and yield to call do. Features. Bonds can be issued with different features attached. Among the most common are the following. Call feature. As noted previously, a call feature allows an issuer to call in a bond before maturity. Issuers will generally do this when interest rates are falling. From the issuer's perspective, why pay 6% interest to investors on an existing bond if current interest rates have fallen to 4%? It is better to call in the 6% bond and simply issue a new bond paying the lower current interest rate. This feature benefits the issuer. Put feature. A put feature for a bond is the opposite of a call feature. Instead of the issuer calling in a bond before it matures, with a put feature, the investor can put the bond back to the issuer before it matures. Investors will generally do this when interest rates are rising. From the investor's perspective, why accept 6% interest on a bond one owns if current interest rates have risen to 8%? It is better to put the 6% bond back to the issuer, take the principal returned, and invest it in a new bond paying the current interest rate of 8%. This feature benefits the bondholder. Convertible. Much like our discussion of convertible preferred stock, convertible bonds are issued by corporate issuers, allowing the investor to convert the bond into shares of common stock, giving the investor the opportunity to exchange a debt instrument for one that gives the investor ownership rights, shares of common stock, is generally considered a benefit for the investor. Take note. When bonds are issued with features that benefit the issuer, like a call feature, the issuer generally will need to pay a slightly higher coupon rate of interest to make the bond attractive to new investors. Conversely, when bonds are issued with features that benefit the bondholder, like put or conversion features, the issuer can usually pay a slightly lower coupon rate of interest as the feature will compensate for the lower return. 2.1.2.2 Treasury Securities. The U.S. Treasury Department determines the quantity and types of government securities it must issue to meet federal budget needs. The marketplace determines the interest rates those securities will pay. The federal government is the nation's largest borrower, as well as the best credit risk. Securities issued by the U.S. government are backed by its full faith and credit, based on its power to tax. In this light, securities issued by the U.S. government are considered to be among the highest in quality regarding safety of principal. These securities are classified as bills, notes, and bonds, which distinguish each issue's term to maturity, short, intermediate, and long term. Finally, government securities issued by the U.S. Treasury are all issued in book entry form, meaning that no physical securities or paper certificates exist. Treasury bills, or T-bills. U.S. Treasury bills are direct short-term debt obligations of the U.S. government. They are issued weekly with maturities of 4 weeks, 13 weeks, 20 weeks, and at times 52 weeks. Though the maximum maturity for T-bills is subject to change, they are always short-term instruments, that is, 1 year or less. Treasury bills pay no interest in the way other bonds do. Rather, they are issued at a discount from par value and redeemed at par. For example, an investor might purchase a $10,000 26-week T-bill at a price of $9,800. She would receive no regular interest check, but at maturity, the Treasury would send her a check for $10,000. The difference between the $9,800 she paid and the $10,000 she received would be considered her interest income, even though she never received a separate interest check. Take note. Key points to remember regarding T-bills include: Treasury bills are the only Treasury security issued at a discount. Treasury bills are the only Treasury security issued without a stated interest rate. Treasury bills are highly liquid. And 13-week, also referred to as 90-day Treasury bills, are used in market analysis as the stereotypical risk-free investment. Treasury notes, or T-notes. U.S. Treasury notes are direct debt obligations of the U.S. government. They pay semi-annual interest as a percentage of the stated par value, and they mature at par value. T-notes have intermediate maturities of 2 to 10 years. Treasury bonds, or T-bonds. U.S. Treasury bonds are direct debt obligations of the U.S. government. They pay semi-annual interest as a percentage of the stated par value and mature at par value. These government obligations have long-term maturities greater than 10 years and up to 30 years. Testable features of Treasury bills, notes, and bonds. Marketable government securities. For T-bills, the maturity is less than 1 year. Pricing is issued at a discount. They are priced on discount basis, and the form is book entry. For T-notes, maturity is 2 to 10 years, or intermediate term. Pricing is priced at percentage of par, and the form is book entry. For T-bonds, the maturity is greater than 10 years, long term. Pricing is priced at a percentage of par, and the form is book entry. Treasury receipts and strips. Treasury receipts. Brokerage firms can create a type of bond known as a Treasury receipt from U.S. Treasury notes and bonds. Broker-dealers buy Treasury securities, place them in trust at a bank, and sell separate receipts against the principal and coupon payments, essentially separating the coupon interest payments from the principal. Although the Treasury securities held in trust collateralize the Treasury receipts, unlike Treasury securities, Treasury receipts are not backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Treasury strips, or separate trading of registered interest and principal of securities. The Treasury Department has its own version of receipts known as Treasury strips. The Treasury Department designates certain issues as suitable for stripping into interest and principal components. Banks and broker-dealers perform the actual separation of interest, coupon, and principal, and trading of the strips. Test topic alert. Treasury strips are backed in full by the U.S. government. Treasury receipts are not. 2.1.2.3 U.S. Government Agency Issues. In addition to the U.S. Treasury-issued securities, T-bills, T-notes, and T-bonds, the U.S. Congress authorizes the following agencies of the federal government to issue debt securities: the Farm Credit Administration, the Government National Mortgage Association, GNMA or Ginnie Mae, other agency-like organizations operated by private corporations include the following: Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, FHLMC or Freddie Mac, the Federal National Mortgage Association, FNMA or Fannie Mae, Student Loan Marketing Association, SLMA or Sallie Mae. The term agency is sometimes used to refer to entities that are not technically government agencies, but that do have ties to the government. For example, Fannie Mae is privately owned but government-sponsored. Take note. The settlement of agency-issued securities occurs regular way, 2 business days, T plus 2. These securities are generally known as asset-backed or mortgage-backed securities. Farm Credit System. The Farm Credit System, or FCS, is a national network of lending institutions that provides agricultural financing and credit. The system is a privately owned, government-sponsored enterprise that raises loanable funds through the sale of farm credit securities to investors. These funds are made available to farmers through a nationwide network of banks and farm credit lending institutions. The Farm Credit Administration, or FCA, a government agency, oversees the system. Government National Mortgage Association, GNMA. The Government National Mortgage Association, or GNMA, is a government-owned corporation that supports the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Ginnie Mae's are the only agency securities backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, or Freddie Mac. The Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, FHLMC, is a public corporation. It was created to promote the development of a nationwide secondary market in mortgages by buying residential mortgages from financial institutions and packaging them into mortgage-backed securities for sale to investors. Federal National Mortgage Association, or Fannie Mae. The Federal National Mortgage Association, FNMA, is a publicly held corporation that provides mortgage capital. FNMA purchases conventional and insured mortgages from agencies such as the FHA and the VA. The securities it creates are backed by FNMA's general credit. 2.1.2.4 Corporate Bonds. Corporate debt securities, like any other loan, may be either secured or unsecured. Secured debt securities are backed by various kinds of assets owned by the issuing corporation, whereas unsecured debt securities are backed only by the reputation, credit record, and financial stability of the corporation. The latter is commonly referred to as being backed by the corporation's full faith and credit. Mortgage bonds. Just as the owner of a home pledges a real asset, the home and land, as collateral for a loan, the mortgage, a corporation will borrow money backed by real estate and physical assets of the corporation. Just as a home ordinarily would have a market value greater than the principal amount of its mortgage, the value of the real assets pledged by the corporation will be in excess of the amount borrowed under that bond issue. If the corporation develops financial problems and is unable to pay the interest on the bonds, those real assets pledged as collateral are generally sold to pay off the mortgage bondholders. Having the real assets as collateral for the loan puts the purchaser of a mortgage bond in a position of safety. This is a secured loan. Equipment trust certificates. Corporations, particularly railroads and other transportation companies, finance the acquisition of capital equipment used in the course of their business. For example, railroads will issue equipment trust certificates to purchase their rolling stock and locomotives. Title to the newly acquired equipment is held in trust, usually by a bank acting as a trustee, until the certificates have been paid in full. When the railroad has finished paying off the loan, it receives clear title to its equipment from the trustee. If the railroad does not make the payments, the lender repossesses the collateral and sells it for its benefit. Again, this is an example of a secured loan. The obligation to pay the investor is secured by the equipment. Collateral trust bonds. Sometimes a corporation wants to borrow money and has neither real estate to back a mortgage bond nor equipment to back an equipment trust to use as collateral. Instead, it deposits securities it owns into a trust to serve as collateral for the lenders. The securities it deposits can be securities in other corporations or those of partially or fully owned subsidiaries, as long as the securities are marketable, that is, readily able to be liquidated. Collateral trust certificates are secured by the securities deposited, and obviously, the better the quality of the securities, the better the quality of the certificate. Debentures. A debenture is a debt obligation of the corporation backed only by its word and general creditworthiness. Debentures are written promises of the corporation to pay the principal at its due date and interest on a regular basis. Although this promise is as binding as a promise for a secured bond, such as a mortgage bond, debentures are not secured by any pledge of property. They are sold on the general good faith and credit of the company, unsecured. Take note, although debentures are unsecured, there are issuers whose credit standing is so good that their debentures might be considered safer than secured bonds of less creditworthy companies. Guaranteed bonds. Guaranteed bonds are backed by a company other than the issuing corporation, such as a parent company. The value of the guarantee is only as good as the strength of the company making that guarantee. Test topic alert. Never be fooled by the apparent strength of the word guaranteed as it relates to guaranteed bonds. These are unsecured debt securities. Income bonds. Income bonds, also known as adjustment bonds, are used when a company is reorganizing and coming out of bankruptcy. Income bonds pay interest only if the corporation has enough income to meet interest on debt obligations and if the board of directors declares that the interest payment be made. Obviously, income or adjustment bonds fall under the heading of unsecured debt securities. Test topic alert. Income bonds are a true oxymoron. If an investor is seeking income, an income bond is not likely a suitable recommendation. Senior of subordinated debt. The word senior is used to describe the relative priority of a security claim. For example, every preferred stock has a senior claim to common stock. In this regard, it is important to know that every debt security has senior claim to preferred stock. Secured bonds have a senior claim to unsecured bonds. Sometimes the word subordinated is used to describe a class of debt securities. This means, quote, belonging to a lower or inferior class or rank, secondary, end quote. It is usually used in describing a type of debenture. A subordinated debenture has a claim that is behind or junior to that of any other creditor. However, no matter how subordinated the debenture, it is still senior to any stockholder. Example. Here is an example of the order or priority a trustee would follow if liquidating a corporation's securities due to bankruptcy. Secured creditors' debt instruments, mortgage bonds, equipment trust certificates, collateral trust bonds and mortgages, unsecured creditors' debt instruments, general creditors such as suppliers and utilities, debenture holders, guaranteed bonds and income bonds, subordinated debt, debt holders who agreed to be paid back last of all debt holders in the event a liquidation ever needs to occur, preferred stockholders, and then common stockholders.